inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lee.
There's lots of different types of rental properties you can invest in. Harrison, you found a lot of success with C-class properties. I want to find out what you're doing, but first, can you define for us what you mean by a C-class property?
Sure. Yeah, I do really like C-class rentals. I would say it's a C-class property is typically a property that has been neglected for a really long time, traditionally in what you call maybe like emerging markets or, you know, not so good neighborhoods.
Why do you like them so much? Like, what about the C-class rental is really attracting you to them?
Sure. Really the high upside and the high cash flow relative to a downtown Boston property, maybe a Class A property. Typically, you'll see a, 3 or 4% cap rate on a property like that, which is really stable, but you're not really seeing a huge cash on cash return every month. Whereas with the C-class properties, they definitely require a lot more sweat equity, elbow grease, and not for the faint of heart, but they have a much higher cash flow upside and value upside after renovations and improvements.
On the podcast today, we're going to take a look at exactly what Harrison's doing. We'll talk about the good and the bad of investing in C-class properties, and we'll take a look at one of his deals and see how Harrison has been building his portfolio with very little of his own money. Joining us on the show today from Springfield, Massachusetts, is Harrison Bonner. We'll take a really quick break to thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll talk to Harrison. It's a lot of work to find a really good rental property. And when you actually find that property, you want to make sure you're working with a lender that can get that loan closed. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender and her specialty is helping investors finance rental properties. She has a ton of loan programs and she can find something customized to you for your situation. If you want to find out more or you're ready to get started today, just go to RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, LendingGroup.com, NMLS 42056. Right now, Chaley has a special limited time offer just for our listeners. Mention Rental Income Podcast and she will credit you back $250 at closing.
Rental Income Podcast.
So I'm kind of picturing that your properties are in like a city area where maybe there's like retail on the first floor and then apartments above that?
That's correct. Yeah. Some of the buildings don't have the retail component, but many of them do, especially right in that downtown area.
That's interesting. So like, what are you doing with the retail part of it? Like, do you just have like stores or restaurants in there?
Sure. Well, we're actually doing something a little creative rather than working to find a commercial tenant to fill that retail or restaurant space or whatever may be available by building. We're actually becoming our own tenant and creating sort of additional side businesses for our overarching portfolio. One example is we have a building with 12 residential units above and one vacant commercial space below. The area, it needs life brought to the area. It needs business. It needs positive sort of reinforcement. So we said, instead of finding, going through the trouble of trying to find a tenant that may not want to come here, why don't we just create another business and become our own tenant? So in that building, we're actually outfitting a laundromat on the first floor commercial space of that building. There's really not one around. Many of the apartments do not have in-unit laundry. So we felt like it's a need for the neighborhood. It's definitely another high cash flowing business. And we are becoming our own tenant. So we're just really driving that culture change in the neighborhood with the residents and the tenants that we're putting in place, plus the additional businesses that we're bringing.
What a great idea. It's almost like you're house hacking in a way, but you're house hacking a business.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That's really, really awesome. And so like what other types of businesses do you have in your other buildings?
Sure. So another one that we are, two others that we're developing. One is an event space that is a very similar type building, 12 residential units above and then a commercial unit on the first floor. It actually is in reasonably good condition. It needs some rehab, but it has a stage and it looks like it should be an event space. And then our biggest project that we are working on is currently a larger historical tax credit project. And within that building, again, a ground floor, a retail commercial space, we said this is a perfect space for a restaurant with a nightlife component. It's actually a really good way for us to outfit our own restaurant in our own building, again, becoming our own tenant and being the change in culture that we want to see rather than waiting on it to come to us.
Yeah. I mean, I really, really love that idea. That's just really an interesting way to start a business, to use your real estate to help you start the business. And you just figure your overhead is going to be so much less than any competitors you're going to have because you own the building. You're not paying rent somewhere. So exactly. I think that's really cool. So this community, it sounds like it was a community that was thriving at some point, and then it's kind of a depressed economy, but things are getting better in the area.
Absolutely. Holyoke, Massachusetts, is the town we're speaking of. It's one of those old mill towns. So there's a ton of beautiful brick architecture. There's huge vacant mill buildings or mostly vacant mill buildings. You can really just like you drive through the area and you feel like this is ripe for opportunity. The city of Holyoke, the paper mills that were in the area in the early 20th century, they actually used to produce about 90 to 95% of all of the paper that was milled in the country. So it was a really wealthy, really wealthy area. I believe it had the most like millionaires per capita was a stat that I heard in like the 1920s, 30s, 40s. I'm not exactly sure when the industry, started to leave. But, slowly over the 20th century, the company and the industry left and it sort of, left the area to become neglected and depressed, as you say, but definitely is on the upswing. I would say the 80s and 90s were probably the worst time for the area. And we've already, in our 3.5 years of investing in the city, we've already seen a decrease in crime, a change in there's been a new mayor to come in. There has been infrastructure improvements along the main corridor. So in just that short amount of time, we've really already started to notice cultural change and just a general like feeling of change throughout the city.
That's great. It sounds like you're getting in at a great time. So tell me about your portfolio. What does your portfolio look like?
We are now totaling about 160 units. That is spread across. It's 11 properties. I'm sorry, 12 properties. Some of the properties are multiple buildings. So it's about 15 buildings.
I mean, this sounds like you've had to come up with a ton of money to make this work. Like, did you have a lot of money saved before you started investing? Like, how did you do this?
It actually, since our inception back in 2016, we have actually always raised outside capital. OPM, as they like to say, other people's money. Between my business partner and I, we probably have collectively, $50,000 of our own money in the business. More put in like in 2016 when we got started, and we've just sort of always left it there. We've rolled over profits into the business. We really just take a small stipend to pay the bills and keep the lights on, and everything else we keep in the business so that we can continue to grow and grow and grow. Also while raising outside capital. So, 99% of our financing has come from a combination of bank financing or hard money lending financing and mom and pop investor capital, which we've raised. We currently have about $6 million of active private investor capital working.
So it sounds like you're doing the Burr strategy.
That's exactly
right. Okay. So you're buying beat up, rundown buildings. And, a lot of people we've had on the podcast that have done the Burr strategy, they've done this with single family houses, mm-hmm. but you're doing the same strategy, but just with bigger apartment buildings.
Exactly. That's awesome. Exactly correct.
Awesome. So let's walk through one of your deals and try to see how this works. So the property we're going to talk about, tell me what the property was like when you first bought it.
Sure. So our latest full cycle project is really the first one that got us hooked on this marketplace. This was a property that was, it's two buildings, 13 unit commercial property. When we bought it for $375,000 about 3 years ago, and it, you know, half the units didn't have heat, half the units were vacant, the windows were falling apart. You know, there was some rent being collected, you know, maybe $2,000 or $3,000 a month, which across 13 units, you know, that's just, that's barely scraping by. It's certainly enough to pay a mortgage. And the decks were, seemed like they were just about falling down, and the property is in really, really bad shape.
Yep. When I hear stories like that about a building just being run down, and it's not like the old owner walked away from it because he's still collecting some rent. Well, what do you think was going on with the old owner that he was letting the building be like that?
You know, I believe it was an out of state owner. There seemed to be at the time, because we bought a couple of properties from out of state owners. There were a couple of New York investors both the ones I'm thinking of both happened to be in the New York area. And it seemed like maybe they wanted some inexpensive out-of-state real estate and maybe just underestimated the amount of management that was going to need to go into it and just sort of the difficulty of operating a rental property like that that needed that much work and was that far away from you physically without a property manager.
Right.
So I don't know what their exact motivations were, but I have a feeling they were a little bit over their heads, or they didn't really, you know, had a different set of expectations before they got into it. Because, you know, they, at the closing, it wasn't like they were walking away with $1 million. We purchased the property for, you know, $375,000.
All right. So a building like that, even though it wasn't a full gut rehab, it sounds like it was going to need a ton of work. How much did you end up spending on fixing the property up?
Yeah, it definitely did need a ton of work. But we spent about $450,000 over the course of about 2.5 years making all of the improvements.
Wow. Okay. So your purchase price is $375,000. You put $450,000 into it. So talk to me about the funding. So how did you get the money to make this work?
Sure. So it was a mix of hard money capital and private money. Hard money lenders will not only lend on single family flips, but turns out they'll also lend on 13 unit apartment building and apartment building deals. So we got a hard money loan, and that covered, you know, the majority of the purchase, plus what we thought at the time was going to be all of the rehab expenses. And I believe we came to the closing table. We needed to come to closing table with about $100,000 to $125,000, and we were able to raise that from, you know, three or four mom and pop investors investing $30,000 here, $50,000 here, $75,000 here, and that was what we used to initially finance the original purchase of the property.
So you didn't bring any money at all. So you had the hard money, and then you had the private investors that basically loaned you the money for the down payment.
That's correct.
For the rehab, for the $450,000 that you spent on the rehab, was that coming from private investors too?
The majority of that was funded through the original hard money loan. So about $300,000 of it was funded through the original hard money loan. But over the course of the renovations, you know, we could kind of foresee that we were going over our original budget. And so it gave us some time to continue to raise private capital from our current network, and then, you know, expanding our network to continue to build our investor list. So the difference there from our original rehab budget that was approved on our first loan to what we actually ended up spending was financed from some additional private money lenders.
Okay, so you're all in at $375,000 and $450,000. So you're all in at $825,000.
Yeah.
When you when you got the building appraised, when you finished the rehab, how much did the building appraise for?
They were actually able to come up with a value of $1.66 million, which meant that we wanted to qualify for a loan of around $1.2 million. And we were just, you know, that's obviously way more than the current debt that we had on the property. And we said, holy cow, you know, we can refinance this property, pay off all of our investors, take some additional cash out. That's non-taxable, by the way, because it's a loan, not income.
Right.
And roll that right into doing this again and again and again.
So you've just basically created about $800,000 in equity by doing this BRRRR project.
Exactly.
That is awesome. Now, let's look at the cash flow. So you said you have about $15,000 a month in rent coming in?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's look at your expenses. So how much is your mortgage payment on that property?
So on our new refinanced mortgage payment, our payment is just under $8,000 a month.
Okay. And does that include taxes and insurance?
It does not.
Okay. And how much would you estimate, say on a monthly basis, how much taxes and insurance come to?
Those two combined are about $1,500 a month.
Okay. So the $8,000 mortgage, $1,500 for taxes and insurance. So you're at about $9,500 a month for your fixed expenses. Now, you've just rehabbed the building, so you're probably not going to have a lot of CapEx stuff coming up. But, I mean, it's an older building. You're going to have repairs here and there. How much do you estimate you spend on repairs and, say, other expenses you might have for the building?
Sure. The repairs, maintenance, cleanup of the property and trash collection, those all total about $1,000 a month.
Okay. All right. So you're all in at about $10,500. So you're making about $4,500 a month on that building that you put no money into, just your time.
Exactly. None of our own cash. No additional debt outside of the new first position lender and $800,000 of equity.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, with the area that the properties are in, do you have a lot of Section 8 tenants or are you able to get cash paying tenants?
We do have a good amount of Section 8 tenants. That is actually what we target because we know that if a tenant comes in with a permanent Section 8 voucher, that we can guarantee ourselves, you know, as much as, you know, 75% to 90% of the expected rent. We can know that that portion is guaranteed to come in exactly on time on the first of every month. The market as a whole is still in that emerging phase, so it can be difficult sometimes to find good market rate tenants, but oftentimes Section 8 will approve higher for a unit than you may be able to get at market rate.
Right.
Yeah, it's a really good program for us as landlords, and obviously for the tenants having some rental assistance.
Yeah, I feel like it takes away a lot of the risk too, that you know that you've got this guaranteed money coming in every month, and as long as you can do a good job of screening your tenants and finding good tenants, you can have a pretty easy job managing this property or all your properties.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge benefit. And actually for the tenants, they're really incentivized to be sure that they are staying on time with the balance that they owe to their landlord, being sure the property is kept in good condition, because on the event, you know, in the event that they move out of that apartment and want to get a new apartment with a new landlord, they could actually lose their voucher if they owe their previous landlord any back of rent, or if they damage the property. There's kind of a checks and balances on all sides. So the tenants are incentivized to be a good tenant, to take care of the property and to pay on time.
Sure. So talk to me about when you're doing the rehabs. Like, so when you buy an apartment building, and you know, for this building, you had some of the units that were rented out, so you have money coming in. What's better, to kind of get rid of everybody and do a full rehab on a vacant building, or to at least have the tenants that are in there to at least have some revenue coming in from those units.
It's absolutely better to have a vacant building, which is actually why this building in particular wasn't as much of a headache. Some others have been, but for the reasons of inheriting problem tenants that are just used to the way things used to be, many of these tenants have been here for, have been in these buildings for years. They're used to things not being repaired, and they're used to being able to leverage that to not pay rent. And that's not ultimately the environment that we want to curate inside of our properties.
Right.
So yeah, it's absolutely better to have a vacant building. Then you can really get in, and old plumbing is always probably the largest issue. And you can really easily renovate the plumbing infrastructure of the buildings. The bathrooms seem to be stacked one on top of the other in all of our properties. So if there's a partially occupied building, plumbing all ties into the, they all tie in together. So it makes the renovation portion of the plumbing renovation portion of the property really difficult if you have to work around occupied units and, you know, obviously construction dust and just general nuisance and things like that, that it's just not really a good environment for tenants.
Right.
So we really try to avoid it.
If you want to reach out to Harrison, I've got his website, email, and social media on my website. You can find it all at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode419. I'd like to thank Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group for sponsoring today's episode. If you're looking for financing for your first or next rental property, reach out to Chaley. She will take good care of you. You can find her at ridgelendinggroup.com, NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast today. Make sure you hit that follow button. I put out a new episode every single Tuesday, and if you're following the show, you'll get notified as soon as the next episode comes out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.